Okay, well, a little early today, but I can at least start as people walk in. Are there any difficulties with the WebAssign problem set? On some of those, you have to enter a matrix. There's a trick for doing so. You may know this by now, but WebAssign is going to give you, if you need to do like a 2x3 matrix, what you'll see on WebAssign, it's typically three entry blocks to fill in a 2x3 matrix. What's subtle here is what you do is you fill in the first row, because you'll have, sorry, you have three columns to work with. You'll fill in the first row, and then there's a little, I forget what the symbol is. There's a little symbol down here, like maybe a little arrow or something like this. You click on that, and then another set of entry box for the next row of the matrix will occur. And you just put single numbers or whatever entries are in those boxes. And it's easy to fill out. But the first time you do this, you see you've got to enter a matrix, but you only have three entry boxes. It's confusing as to what you're supposed to do. But you enter row at a time, and then you use the little down arrow or whatever to bring up the next row. Okay, anyway, assignment two is going to be tentatively due on Monday. I am accepting late homework, so if you don't, any given week, you don't get your homework in on time, you should still do your homework because it's good preparation for the exams. I'm not going to take any points off for late homework, but WebAssign is going to annotate the file title with turned in late. So I can track if people are doing homework or not, and that may become most relevant at the end of the semester. Someone comes into my office with a D and say, look, I did all the homework. Yeah, but you did all the homework the night before the exam. You can't expect to do well in the course. So I do keep track of it, and just so I have some way of understanding your performance. But other than that, the key thing is always to do the homework. And particularly this section now where we're doing row reduction, it's an easy calculation, tends to be tedious, but step by step, it's really easy. And you really have to go through a number of these problems before it begins to flow. And you just see, oh, I got to row reduce a matrix. You just go ahead and do it. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Essentially, the way I've set things up so far is, get this going here. There we go. In the last lecture, I introduced augmented matrices as a way of encapsulating the data for a linear system into a single matrix. And not a matrix equation. Now, what we do is we capture the coefficients and the numbers that appear on the right-hand side in a single matrix. From that matrix, it effectively represents the system of equations. And rather than manipulate equations themselves, what we do is we manipulate that matrix representation of the equations. And we manipulate them using operations on the rows of that matrix that correspond to operations on the original set of equations that did not affect the solution set. And so what we do is we take a linear system, convert it to an augmented matrix, and then we start doing these elementary row operations to put it in a special form, so-called reduced row echelon form. That will be the form of the augmented matrix when you've actually reached the solution of the linear system. And once you get there, then the idea is just to convert back to equations and write down the solution. So what we're going to be focusing on today is how we take a matrix and we convert it into reduced row echelon form. All right, so actually I have several slides that we're going to replicate what I just said. You have a linear system. You grab all the coefficients of the variables. You put them in the left-hand side of this augmented matrix. This vertical line is just to separate the coefficient data from the numbers that appear on the right-hand side. Oh, I should also point out, because this will be important later on, you think of this as a coefficient matrix, and you think of the individual columns as being tied to the variable. So this second index is going to tell you which variable is associated with this column. This would be XM in the last column. That's relevant as soon as you try to convert an augmented matrix back into equations. This first row is going to correspond to the equation A11. Now we use the association of the first column with the first variable, A11 plus A12 X2 plus dot 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 plus A1M XM equals D1. So we can go back and forth between augmented matrices and equations. What's nice about this is we don't have to write down all the variables or all the plus signs and other notational apparatus if we simply are trying to track how our equations are changing. We'll just represent them by augmented matrices. All right, and then what we can do to those augmented matrices is we can manipulate them in a way that will lead us at the end back to the equations of our solution. So there are three things that we can do to an augmented matrix. One is switching the orders of the row, just flipping rows in that. That's kind of innocuous. If you think of it in terms of equation, it just means changing the orders of equations. We can also replace a row by a scalar multiple of itself. So think of these as row vectors. So this, each row is going to have lots of components. And lambda times a row means I multiply every element in that row by the same number, lambda. And it's important that you don't choose lambda equal to zero, because what would that do? If you multiply anything by zero, it's going to produce zero. So what happens is you take a row, multiply by zero, you in fact destroyed all the information that was in that row, because everything that was non-zero there now must be zero. So when we do this scalar multiplication, we do restrict lambda to not equal to zero, so that we don't lose information via these operations. And then the last elementary row operation corresponds to taking two equations, adding them together, and replacing one of the equations with that the new sum. Or more generally, take an equation and replacing it with a sum of the original equation plus a multiple of a second equation. All right, so these are the three operations we're allowed to perform in manipulating an augmented matrix until we got the augmented matrix of the solution. All right, so here's the program. We'll write down the augmented matrix. We'll try to convert the augmented matrix into reduced row echelon form. I'll remind you of that in just on the next slide. But the important point at this stage is just to remember that the reduced row echelon form of the augmented matrix is the augmented matrix that we're trying to get to, the one that's going to correspond to the solution. And then once we get the augmented matrix of the solution, we convert back to equations and we'll get the equations of the solution. And then the last step, these last two steps, are maybe I won't even get to these today, but the last step is because solutions of linear equations are always nice linear surfaces, hyperplanes, more exactly. The last step in our scheme for solving linear systems and linear algebra is to get to that hyperplane that actually consists of all vectors that satisfy the original set of equations. Okay, but today we're going to work on row reduction. That's step two. All right, so let me remind you what row echelon form is. In general, when you have a matrix, you can have non-zero entries anywhere, 6, 0, 1, 2, 3, 8, 1. Okay, so these are just a random matrix. What we're trying to do here is identify a particular form of an augmented matrix. And it's going to come in two steps. First, we have a notion of pivots. These are the first non-zero entries in any given row. So I've underlined the pivots in this 3x3 matrix. In the first row, here's the first non-zero entry. Second row, here's the first non-zero entry, and that's the first non-zero entry in the third row. What we require is that these pivots, they occur in a downward staircase if it's the matrix is in row echelon form. So this is not, let me get it colored. Because of, look at the first row and the second row, the pivot appears to have moved off to the left. But that's not allowed, not for row echelon form. What happens in your row echelon form is as you move down the matrix, the pivots have to be moving off to the right. So this is not in row echelon form, but a matrix like 1, 0, 1, 0, 2, 1, 0, 0, 1, well, here are the pivots. And as required of row echelon form, the pivots are occurring in this downward staircase from the upper left to the lower right. All right, so that's all you're looking for. It's visual. It's a way of identifying a matrix in row echelon form. This is halfway to the augmented matrix that's in reduced row echelon form. To get to reduced row echelon form, we have two other requirements. What we want is a matrix to be in row echelon form, but also we want all the pivots to equal one. So anytime the first non-zero entry in any given row has to be the number one rather than any other real number. And then the other thing we require is that when we look above a pivot or below a pivot in the same column, you only have zeros. So give you an example of that. Let's see, 1, 1, 3, 2. Let me put a zero here. 0, 1, 2, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0. All right, so this matrix is in reduced row echelon form because, first of all, it's in row echelon form. There's only two pivots in the entire matrix. This zero rows, you'll always put them down at the bottom of the matrix. If you do a row interchange and get the zero row down at the bottom, if you're trying to reach reduced row echelon form. And then the pivots here, you do have that downward staircase. As I descend through the matrix, the pivots in the rows are moving off to the right. And then we could have non-zero entries in the matrix, but they're not the pivot entries. The pivot entries have to equal one. That's this condition here. And then the last thing we require is that when we look at a column that contains a pivot, not only is the pivot one, but there's no other non-zero entries in the entire column. See, here's the pivot, these entries are zero. Here's the pivot, these entries are zero. In these columns that don't contain pivots, it's unrestricted, okay? But it turns out that this form is actually unique. If you start with a random matrix, there's only one matrix in reduced row echelon form that you can reach by applying elementary row operations. The task of today's lecture is to actually show you how you do that, how you take an arbitrary matrix and get it in this reduced row echelon form. Now, what's nice about it for some people is that the algorithm itself is largely visual. You look at the matrix and then you decide what to do next. But I'm going to step through an example first, and then I'll give you some rules to follow. But it's pretty clear from the definitions of reduced row echelon form. If you think about it, what to do next kind of becomes obvious. All right, and again, the reason why we're trying to find matrices in reduced row echelon form is that those are going to correspond to the solution matrices of a linear system. And this process by which we convert an augmented matrix into its reduced row echelon form, that's called row reduction. Textbook may call it Gaussian elimination, but we'll just use the terminology row reduction. Okay, so let's do a first example. Here we have a 4 by 5 matrix. It's not in row echelon form, so it can't be in reduced row echelon form. It's not in row echelon form because this pivot in the first row, if I descend, I see there's a pivot off to the left of it in a lower row. Well, that means it's not in row echelon form. The other thing we see is that we have a zero row, and in a row echelon form, the zero rows always have to be at the bottom of the matrix. So the first thing I'll do to this matrix is, well, I'll move this bottom row, the second row to the bottom. And the way I'll do that is I'll simply interchange the second and fourth row. Right? That's easy to do. You just see what happened here. These two rows switched position in the matrix. And now we have a matrix where at least the zero rows at the bottom, but we still have the problem that the pivot in the first row is to the right of the pivot in the second row. The staircase is going the wrong direction. And so what we'll do is we can do another row interchange to put a pivot up in this corner. And then that will mean that if you get a pivot up in this upper corner here, that means at least the first row is in row echelon form. And so what I'll do is I'll simply flip these two rows. All right, now that's a little bit better because the matrix is not yet in row echelon form because as I descend from the second row to the third, the pivot moves off to the right. But at least the first two rows aren't now in row echelon form. And the strategy is going to be to start at the top. In fact, start in this upper left-hand corner, move it down to the matrix, and step by step, ensuring that the pivots are moving off to the right. So the next step is going to be, I'm just rewriting this matrix. I see that the problem with this matrix occurs in the third row. This term here, if I can get rid of it and replace it by a zero, I would be in row echelon form. But I cannot simply erase it and put a zero there. I have to use one of the elementary operations. So what we'll do in this case is we'll try to add a multiple of this first row so that the first component will exactly cancel the first component there. And then we'll get a zero there, but we did so using one of the operations that's not changed the solution set. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to subtract the first row from the third. That's a legitimate combination of the third row and the first row. You can think of this as R3 plus minus 1 times R1. So it does have the form of these row operations where we send a row to its sum with a multiple of another row. That's the operation described here. And what's going to happen? Let's do this for the most part in our heads. I'll have start with the third row, and I'm going to subtract the first row from it. So 1 minus 1. I'm replacing the third row. So 1 minus 1 is 0. 0 minus 1 is negative 1. 1 minus 0 is 1. 0 minus 1 is negative 1. 0 minus 1 is negative 1. So you can do these short little calculations of each step pretty quickly. You just have to write things down neatly so you don't make trivial mistakes. But if you write down things neatly, you can immediately write down the result of a given elementary row operation. Okay, well, we were successful in getting rid of that pivot in the third row. We effectively moved it over to the second column. But now we have still another problem. Now, if I descend in rows, here's a pivot sitting directly below a pivot. As you move through a matrix in row echelon form, you can't have pivots stacked on top of one another. They always have to be moving off to the right as you descend through the matrix. So how can we get rid of this? Simple thing to do would be to take the third row again and add the second row to it. Then we'll get a cancellation of that leading entry. Okay, so let's do it. I'm going to take the second row, add it to the third, and use that sum to replace the third row. So I'll have 0 plus 0 is equal to 0. I'm effectively adding these two rows. 0 plus 0 is 0. 1 minus 1 is 0. 3 plus 1 is 4. 1 plus minus 1. I guess I got a mistake there, don't I? Yeah, I did something here. Why am I changing this? The second row end up getting changed somehow. Okay, so I've got a typo on my slide. Let me do this properly then. I'll work directly here. This is going to go to 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. Second row is not changing. 3, 1, 2. And then here, what's happening is we're going to change the third row by adding the second row to it. So I'll have 0 plus 0 is 0. 1 plus minus 1 is 0. 3 plus 1 is 4. 1 minus 1 is 0. And 2 minus 1 is 1. And then the fourth row is unperturbed by this operation that only affects row 3. All right, and so, yeah, and now we stop because we've got this matrix in at least row echelon form. All right, so row echelon form is the first special form that I've talked about. It's simply when you've got the pivots occurring in a downward staircase off to the right, and you've got a zero row at the bottom. This is, when you reach row echelon form, this is like the first half of the full row reduction to reduce row echelon form. Echelon form. Okay, so we still have some more work to do on such a matrix if I wanted to get it all the way to reduce row echelon form. But the subsequent steps, at least the next step, is really easy. Let me just say verbally what I did in the last example. I had a zero row in the matrix. So the first thing I did is I moved that zero row to the bottom of the matrix. Easily done. And then I didn't have a pivot in the first row. The idea is you're going to start up in this upper corner and use its entries to clear out the entries below, and then you'll descend down. But to get started, you need something up in that corner. And so in the second step, what I did is I flipped the first and second rows so that I can get a pivot in this upper left corner. That pivot was then used to clear out the entry in the third row, and then we repeated the process looking at the second row and its relation to the third row. So what you do when you have pivots sitting in the same column, you take the upper pivot and you use it to cancel out the entry in the row below it. And typically you do it something like this. If I was working in the first row, let me describe what's going on here. If you have a row like A11, dot, 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 A1N, you have another row down here, AI1, AIM. So this is the first row, and here's the ith row. How can I get rid of this guy? Well, what you're going to do is you're going to take a multiple of this row and add it to this so that this term gets canceled. Well, what you'll have to do is, let me just focus on this third row. What I'd want to do is multiply by minus 1, 1 over aij times that first row. And then I'd have a11. Then I have AI1M divided by AI1 times A1M. Those are the entries. First entry, last entry, and the ith row. What I'm trying to do is replace this row with a multiple of this row so that this term cancels. And so what I'm effectively doing here, sorry, I've got this written wrong. I need I1 and 1, 1 here. So when I multiply every term in this row by divided by A11, I'll get that cancellation. And then what survives, the multiplication, will exactly cancel out that term there. So it's pretty easy to see what multiple of upper row you need to eliminate a pivot entry below the pivot in that row. All right, we'll do lots of examples, but again, it's not so clear if I write it out in prose exactly what's going on. But after you do enough of these row reductions, it's going to appear very natural what you do next. All right, so and so you do that for the first row, and then you just think of having fixed the problem with row one, then you descend through the matrix, and you do the same thing until you've gotten all the way down to this bottom corner, and you've moved all the pivots as far as you can. You've got this downward staircase formation of those pivots. All right, so and these steps here are just the steps I repeated before. If there's a zero row, you move it to the bottom. If there's an entry in a pivot below the pivot in the second row, what you do is you just do a addition with a multiple of another row to clear out that pivot entry in the lower row. And you just keep repeating this process, moving down the matrix row by row. And then this stage of getting to reduce row echelon form is just going to terminate naturally when you reach the bottom of the matrix. All right, now, to get a matrix in reduced row echelon form, it's got to be in row echelon form with two additional conditions. You need the pivots to all equal one. So here's a matrix that's in row echelon form, but it's not in reduced row echelon form, primarily, well, at least in the first instance, because these pivots are numbers that are not equal to one. But that's easily resolved, right? To make that pivot one, I'll divide the entire row by 1/2. To make this pivot one, I can multiply the entire row by 1/3. And similarly, the third row, we multiply by -1. All right, so getting the pivots to equal one, that's easy. You just look at what your pivots are, and you pick a suitable number, the multiplicative inverse of the entry, multiply the entire row by that. So I don't just change this leading entry. I multiply every term in the row by 1/2. And then I get a new matrix where now the first two conditions of the three conditions required for a matrix in reduced row echelon form are now satisfied. All right, then the last step is to zero out the entries that are lying above pivots. Remember that when a matrix is in reduced row echelon form, row echelon form, pivots are equal to one, and in addition, the pivots have to be in a given column, they have to be the only non-zero entry in that column. Here we got a two sitting above a one, sitting above the pivot one. So I have to get rid of this guy. This next stage is a lot like the first stage, except the direction in which we work is the opposite. When I was going for row echelon form, I started in this upper corner and worked my way down to the lower right-hand corner. What we do in this last stage is we start in this with the bottom rows, and we try to clear out the entries above, and then we proceed to the next higher row and clear out the entries above there. But the mechanism by which we do that is essentially the same as we did in row reduction. All I do, let's see, I might as well get to an example. Okay, so here's that a matrix that's in row echelon form, the pivots are all equal to one. To get it in reduced row echelon form, I need to empty out the non-zero entries that lie above pivots. We've already got zeros below the pivots. We need to clear out the entries above pivots. So we start with the last row, and we'll use its only non-zero entry to clear out the entries in last entries in row two and in row one. So this is right on the crack of the blackboard. Let me see if I can move it a little bit. All right. So to get rid of this two, what I'm going to do is I'm going to replace row two. Oh, this is another typo. I'm going to replace the second row by its difference with 2 times row 3. So let's do that. Starting with the second row now, and then I'm going to subtract 2 times the third row from it. So 0 times 3 times 0, 0 minus 3 times 2 times 0 is 0. 1 minus 2 times 0 is 1, and 2 minus 2 times 1 is going to equal negative 2, or that term will be 0. And so we get this matrix. And good. Oh, and we also, I did something else as well. I'm also, might as well take care of the first row at the same time. So what I'll do to clear out this entry sitting above the pivot in the bottom row, what I'll do is I'll subtract 1/2 times the bottom row from the top row. That's that operation. And then what will happen is 1 minus 1/2 times 0 is 1. 2 minus 1/2 times 0 is 2. 1/2 minus 1/2 times 1 is 0. All right, good. This pivot and this pivot, those columns look good. The last thing, issue we have is that above the pivot in the second row, we have a non-zero number. And so all we do is take, we got to get rid of this guy. So we'll use the bottom row to, it's a sum with the first row in order to get rid of this entry. And so what we end up doing is we subtract from the first row 2 times the second row. And there we have it. In maybe 3 steps, we've gone from this matrix to its reduced row echelon form. Okay, so we'll do lots of examples of this, but the most important thing to understand the process is to know the definitions of the forms of the matrix. You got to be able to visualize them to see what to do next. But once you do that, the first stage is going to be to start in the upper left-hand corner and use the upper rows to clear out entries, clear out pivots that occur in rows below it. You keep doing that, slowly descending through the matrix until you get the matrix in row echelon form. Then you can quickly rescale the pivot entries so that they're all equal to 1. The last step will then be to start in the lower right-hand corner and then figure out what to do with lower rows in order to eliminate the entries sitting above the pivots in the lower rows. And it's pretty easy to spot. For example, what do I have to do to get rid of this guy? Well, I'll take minus 2 times this term will cancel that. So I simply take the second row and I sum it with minus 2 times the third row, and that will get rid of that entry. Or give me a new row where we don't have that problem. Okay, so that's the process. Let's now implement it. We'll do the full shebang. We'll start with a linear system. We'll convert it to an augmented matrix. We'll row reduce that augmented matrix. Then I'll convert back to equations, and you'll see that indeed I've got the solution in my hand. So here's 3 equations and 3 unknowns. First step, take the data, the coefficients, the number of equations, and the number of variables, use that information to encapsulate to rewrite the data that goes into specifying this system, capture it all in a single augmented matrix. Remembering that although I didn't write them down, at least implicitly, the variables are still there. It's just that they're implicitly attached to certain columns of this augmented matrix. All right, then once we do that, I've got an augmented matrix, we'll start to row reduce it. All right, so here's what we start off with. This is the augmented matrix corresponding to the original linear system. All right, so what are our problems? We've got to pivot up in this upper left-hand corner. Great. I don't have to do any manipulations to get started. I can immediately start eliminating pivots below the pivot in the first row. To get rid of this guy, I'll send row 2 to row 2 minus row 1, right? And then these leading entries are going to end up canceling. And I'll send row 3 to row 3 minus, well, I'm going to have to subtract 2 times the first row in order to get a cancellation here, minus 2 times row 1. And I think that's what I did. Let me erase that. Yes, so that's what you do. And then I'll do one of these. Let's see, 1 minus 1 is 0. 1 minus negative 1, 1 minus 1 is 0. Negative 1 minus 1. Here's the error. I just committed it for you, but be aware. Remember, you frequently are subtracting moving up rather than downward. So 1 minus 1 is 0. Negative 1 minus 1 is going to be negative 2. 1 minus 1, 1 minus a negative 1 is going to be plus 2, and 2 minus 0 is going to equal 2. Okay, so, and then similarly, we calculate what happened to the third row, and now we've got a new matrix where we need to eliminate this guy, right? This is in row echelon form up to the second row, but as soon as we get down to the third row, we have a pivot below the pivot in the second row. But I'm not going to do that so directly. I mean, I could take to the third row, I could add, let's see, minus 3/2 times the second row to get the cancellation. But I recommend you don't do that, because then once you start multiplying rows by fractions, those fractions are going to plague you for the rest of the calculation. So what's easier to do is go ahead and make that pivot equal to 1. We're going to do that eventually anyway. Let's do it now, because then it's easier to see what I have to multiply the second row by in order to get rid of that term. So I'll just rescale that second row. And now it's much easier to describe what we're going to do to get rid of this term. We'll simply multiply the second row by 3 and then add it to the third row. And so what will pop out of that is, good, we've reached row echelon form, because the pivots are now in that nice descending staircase. And that's the first half of row reduction to reduce row echelon form. That's what we've completed. All right, there's more to do, because we've got to get all the way to reduce row echelon form. All right, so the next step is to take that matrix in row echelon form that we just computed. And this is the result of the last line on the last slide. What we'll do is we'll convert that pivot equal to 1. All right, and now we got a matrix in row echelon form. Pivots are all equal to 1. We got to get rid of these guys, because they're sitting above. These are non-zero entries that are sitting above pivots in lower rows. But it's easy to see what to do. To get rid of this guy, I would add the third row to the second row. To get rid of this guy, I would add the third row to the first row. Note here, I'm starting in the first half of the row reduction, I work it from this corner down to this corner. In the second stage, what you do is you work from the bottom right and try to work your way off and up to the upper left. So we'll first clear out the entries above this pivot in the last row. see if we can do that. All right, so easy to see what we need to do. For the first row to get rid of this guy, we'll add the third row to it. And similarly, we'll do exactly the same thing to the second row. All right, good. This column's okay, that column's okay, but here we have a problem. So we'll end up subtracting the second row from the first to clear out that entry. There we go, and now we've got, good, a matrix that's now in reduced row echelon form. Because it's in row echelon form, the pivots are all equal to one, and above and below pivots, we have nothing but zeros. Good. All right. The row reduction stage, or the row reduction part of the calculation of the solution to the original linear system is now finished. What we do next is we take this augmented matrix, which, by the way, is going to have exactly the same solutions as the original linear system because we performed operations that don't change solutions. What we'll do is we'll convert back to equations. To do that, there's the augmented matrix. And call that x1, x2, and x3. Remember, the columns on the coefficient side of the augmented matrix are attached to particular variables. And so once we realize that attachment, we get the corresponding equations being, from the first row, we get 1 times x1, 0 times x2, 0 times x3 is equal to 1. Or you simplify that, simply x1 is equal to 1. And the second row, you can construct the equation from the augmented matrix, and then you can simplify it to simply saying x2 is equal to 2. And the third row basically tells us that x3 has to equal 3. And we're done. We've got three unique numbers this equation, this set of equation, has the same solution as the original system, but in fact, this is something that you would just anyway call the solution of the system because each variable is set to a particular number. Okay, so that's our technique. And I guess what I'll try to do next is, there's one last step here. The last step that we'll employ uniformly is once we get the equations of the solution, is to realize that those vectors that satisfy those equations, we want to think of them as vectors, not as in terms of variables. So what I found on the last slide is that x1 had to equal 1, x2 had to equal 2, and x3 had to equal 3. So my solution vector, its three components are 1, 2, and 3. And we can think of that as a hyperplane if you think of a hyperplane as being of this particular form. Generally speaking, you start with a point, and then you start straying from it in a bunch of different directions. However, that parameter t that I erased, that's usually a free parameter of the solution, means you have more than one solution. But when you have a unique solution, as in this case, that hyperplane solution is just going to be this vector encapsulated in a set, because I'm talking about the solution set rather than the solution. But in the case when you have a unique solution, there's not that much difference between a set of solutions and the solution itself. Okay, so we've done one complete example. The way it proceeded is we took our linear system, wrote down the augmented matrix, used row reduction to first reach row echelon form. So at this stage, you're starting here and you're trying to move downward through the matrix until clearing out pivots as you move along until you reach this bottom row. then the next step will be in the row reduction to reduce your echelon form. And that consists of two sub-steps. First, you convert all the pivots equal to one by multiplying the row by an appropriate factor. And second of all, you use the process of adding multiples of one row to another to remove the entries that are sitting above the pivots in the lower rows. When you reach row echelon form, below the pivots, you can only have zero. But in this stage, what you're largely trying to do is get rid of the pivots that are sitting up, entries that are sitting above pivots. Then you convert back to equations. And the last step is to reformulate the solution as a set of vectors. Okay, now we're going to do some more examples. The purpose of these examples that I'll conclude today's lecture with is just to make contact with our geometric understanding of equations. Remember last week when I was talking about equations, I said you can think of an equation as being solution hyperplanes, and that when you have pairs of equations, there would be intersections of hyperplanes. And that, for example, if you had equations that were redundant with one another, that would mean that the hyperplanes actually coincided with one another. Well, but I also said that in three dimensions, that could be kind of obvious is when you plot the hyperplanes. But when you have more variables and those sort of redundancies amongst the equations can be hidden. And let me look at this example. I don't see any obvious redundancies in this set of equations. But I've worked this example out beforehand, and there is going to be a redundancy. I'm going to show you how it's exposed as we do row reduction. All right, so first of all, since we have three equations and three unknowns, naively, we would expect the solution space to equal the number of variables that are left over. So you take the number of variables, you subtract the number of equations, and so we should have a unique solution. There should be no free variables in the solution if we have a solution at all. But this is naive, and what I'll show you is it doesn't actually happen in this case. All right, so let's convert to an augmented matrix. That's easily done. And then we'll row reduce this augmented matrix to just follow our procedure. So here we have a pivot in the first row. It's all the way off to the left, which is a good spot for it. So I'll use it, effectively this guy, to eliminate these entries below. Those are the row operations that will achieve that. Then once we've done that, we see we've got it in row echelon form up to the second row, but here we have a problem in the third row. So we'll add a multiple of the second row to the third to eliminate that entry. And now we've got a matrix in reduced row echelon form. Good. First half of row reduction is complete. Now we'll move on to the second stage. First thing we'll do is we'll fix those pivots. We'll make that equal to one. And then the last thing I need to do, here are my two pivots. Don't worry about this guy here. It's not sitting above any pivot, so it's okay to be non-zero. But in this entry here, it's sitting above the pivot in the second row, so I have to get rid of it. And so I'll simply subtract the second row from the first. Good. Now I have a matrix that's in reduced row echelon form. And notice that I have this zero row at the bottom. I started off with three equations and three unknowns. If you write down the equation that corresponds to this last row, it says that 0 times x1 plus 0 times x2 plus 0 times x3 is equal to 0, which is simply saying 0 is equal to 0. It's not putting any restriction at all on the variables. So in fact, if you have a zero row, it corresponds to a vacuous equation. And so in fact, my linear system, it has the same solution as the original set of equations. The equations corresponding to this matrix, you're going to have the same solution set as the original linear system. But one of the equations corresponding to this augmented matrix is trivial. And so I could ignore it. And my system is now a system of two equations and three unknowns, effectively. And so redundancies, somehow hidden in the original set of equations, have now been exposed and trivialized. Okay, that's good. I mean, it just means that our procedure is effective in getting rid of the redundancies that sit inside the equations. All right, and then we've reached this equation in reducial echelon form. Now we'll write down the corresponding equations. All right, first column is x1, x2, and x3. If I write down the equations for this augmented matrix, it works out to be this, or simply just dropping these zero terms, x1 plus x3 is equal to 1, x2 is equal to 1, and 0 is equal to 0. So these are the equations of the solution, but they're not in a nice form where every variable is set to a specific number. Here, this first equation involves two variables. And let me step through this quickly. The idea here is that we regard x3 as the free variable. We take the pivot variable, x1, and if any other terms appear in the corresponding equation, I'm going to move them over to the right-hand side and think of that as a free variable. And what will happen in this case, I'll just move that x3 over. Did I do it? Not really. Okay, so I guess I'll just stop here because I'm already a minute over. The idea is that when you have non-zero entries in a row, the pivot entry is going to be the variable you can solve for, and the other term is going to be moved over to the right-hand side as a free variable.
Well,